This free program is paid for by the listeners of WBAI New York. If you're not already a member, think about joining us to help keep free speech alive.
In New York City. And before those two messages, one rather wacky one and the other more sober, you heard a rebroadcast of the evening news, Concert with Decisión en Español, Informativo. And that means that if all goes according to plan, it's time for this. For this. Moorish, Orthodox, Radio, Crusade, Anarchism for the Global City, Radical Environmentalism for the Concrete Jungle, Esoteric Explorations of the Secret History of Rebel Culture. Every Tuesday at midnight, after the news, on listener-supported, non-commercial WBAI, 99.5.
अब के मिले सब चुराना जाए
Beautiful, beautiful stuff. Kishore Amonkar, one of the great divas of Indian classical music, born 1931 in the city of Mumbai. And we're playing this music in solidarity with the city of Mumbai and the victims of the atrocious attacks which took place there over the weekend. We'll have something to say about this a little bit later on in the show. But let's hear a little bit more. That was the Sarod virtuoso, Buddhadev Dasgupta, who's actually from West Bengal, the city of Kolkata. We'll be returning later on to Kishore Amonkar from Mumbai. But I wanted to hear a little bit of that, too. And, you know, there's quite a few things which could be said about the portrayal of the Mumbai attacks. And one thing which could be said is that there have been all sorts of really horrific terrorist attacks all across India, including today, by the way, in the eastern state of Assam. There was the latest in a series of terrorist attacks, and nobody's even quite sure who was behind them, because there's both a sort of Islamist jihadi type group there, which has been carrying out attacks, as well as a separatist group which wants Assam to be independent from India and is actually quite hostile to the Islamists, because many of the people of Assam are Christians, actually. So nobody's even quite sure who is behind the terrorist attack which took place, and several which have taken place in recent weeks and months in Assam. The one today was at on a rail line, left five dead. And there was one a couple of weeks ago in a coordinated five nearly simultaneous attacks in marketplaces and government buildings in Assam, which left something like 40 dead. And stuff like this has been going on, unfortunately, all over India. in recent weeks and months. Attacks on mosques, Hindu temples, marketplaces, and not only, narrowly defined terrorist attacks where somebody operating in clandestinity leaves a bomb somewhere, but also what they call communal violence in India, or we might say sectarian violence of the same sort, which has recently been happening in central Nigeria between in central Nigeria, it's been between Muslims and Christians. More often in India, it's been between Muslims and Hindus, or between Hindus and Christians. And very little of it makes the headlines in the outside world. You know, the New York Times might put a, just give it a little tiny blurb in their, world briefs section, but they very, very rarely will give it a, real story. You know, they'll just run a little bit of AP copy. Until finally, a bunch of foreign tourists are targeted. At some high-class hotels in the financial capital of India. And then it's, now admittedly, a lot more people died in Mumbai than have at many of these other attacks across India. But still, there's a very obvious double standard which is at work. And one of the ways which it's obvious is that you would think from reading the accounts that it was overwhelmingly foreigners who were killed in the attacks in Mumbai over the weekend. And in fact, exactly the opposite is true. The death toll now stands at around 170, conservatively, possibly higher, of which around 20 were foreigners, and the rest were Indians. But that's not the impression you would get merely from looking at the headlines, where it's stated over and over again that foreigners and tourists were singled out for attack. And it's only really requires a fairly exacting reading of the media accounts to find out that, in fact, foreigners were only a small minority of the victims of the attacks. And I believe that something on the order of 30, probably more, because I heard that I heard that figure over the weekend when the death toll was still not complete, so probably it's much more than 30, but at least 30, I can say, of the victims were Muslims. So, I'm not pointing this out because I feel that, European or American lives are worth any less than Indian lives, but because the mainstream media appear to be suffering from the opposite pathology and seem to be suffering the implicit assumption that, European and American lives are worth more than Indian lives. And then there's, unfortunately, the whole question of the political reaction and reaction to an exploitation of the attacks. And everybody is quite predictably making hay of them and exploiting them for their own personal aims. Of course, the BJP, which is the right-wing Hindu nationalist opposition in India, has been baiting the ruling sort of center-left coalition in India as being soft on terrorism. And by that, of course, they mean Islamic terrorism. Have, in fact, shamed several, at this point, a couple of government officials into stepping down, and they've generally been on the scene and exploiting the situation for what it's worth, including offering one of the leaders of the BJP, Modi, who is the chief minister of Gujarat state. Arrived in Mumbai during the attacks and made a very high-profile offer of $1 million, or actually, I think $3 million in, I got this converted from the rupees, $3 million in compensation to the survivors of the police who lost their lives in the attacks. And the wife of one of the I believe it was the police chief of Mumbai, or very high-ranking officer in the Mumbai police force. His widow, to her credit, refused the compensation offer, recognizing that this was politically tainted money, shall we say, that it wasn't being offered in an altruistic spirit. And then the Indian state, of course, itself has immediately jumped to blame the perennial usual suspect in any terrorist attacks in India, which is Pakistan. And they've sort of thrown down the gauntlet and demand that Pakistan turn over some terrorist suspects who are believed to be in Pakistani territory. They're not believed necessarily to have anything to do with the current attack, something like 20 terrorist suspects, so-called terrorist suspects, only one of which, a man by the name of Hafiz Saeed, who is might plausibly have anything to do with the most recent attacks in Mumbai, because he's the leader of this group, Lashkar-e-Taiba, which is said to have been behind the attacks in Mumbai. And apparently the one sole survivor among the attackers who is in custody supposedly confessed to receiving some kind of paramilitary training from Pakistani security forces or Pakistani army. And this group, Lashkar-e-Taiba, they're one of these groups which has in the past been sort of groomed by the Pakistani intelligence services to make trouble in Indian-controlled Kashmir. You know, it's a very murky situation in Pakistan, and the government itself, of course, is extremely divided and is, in fact, waging a counterinsurgency war against Islamist militants in the west of the country along the Afghan border. So there could be rogue elements of the Pakistani regime which might have had a hand in the attack, but certainly we couldn't say that the government itself did, because the government itself is extremely divided, and the coalition, the ruling coalition, is itself a rather uneasy one, and it in turn is divided from the military, and then there's all these divisions within the military between those elements which are grooming the jihadists and cooperating with them to make trouble in Indian-occupied Kashmir, and those elements which are have been won over to the Western GWAT, Global War on Terrorism, and have broken with the jihadist elements. And then probably there are those elements who are playing both sides, right? So it's a very murky situation. And but there's certainly, after all the tentative progress which has been made towards some kind of détente between India and Pakistan in recent years, there's certainly the very, very dire threat at the moment that there could be the same kind of crisis of imminent saber rattling and threats of military action between the two nuclear regional powers that there was back in 2001, 2002. So it's a really dire situation, which bears watching very, very closely. And, you know, I have to say that, unfortunately, much of what I have heard over the airwaves of WBAI over the weekend and in the days since the attacks has really appalled me. Not so much anything that I've heard from producers, but a lot that I've heard from callers, because I've just heard caller after caller after caller saying that it was a false flag operation, it was carried out by the CIA, it was carried out by Mossad, etc., etc., etc. And, you know, I don't have any evidence that it wasn't, but the fact is that, you know, you conspiranoids out there, you don't have any evidence that it was. And you're merely making political hay out of it in exactly the same way that the BJP is and that the Indian state is and that all of these other cynical political actors are, you know. I mean, I don't know to what degree there is any evidence that Lashkar-e-Taiba was behind the attacks. But I do know that the way New Delhi has sort of thrown down the gauntlet at Islamabad is not helping the situation any. And that they're sort of resorting to usual suspects. And it seems that, you know, a lot of WBAI listeners are just doing the same thing, probably on less evidence, resorting to usual suspects. Oh, it's the CIA. It's Mossad. We don't have to think. We don't have to analyze. We don't have to look at the facts. We already made up our minds. And we're just going to, you know, make political hay out of these at least 170 dead against our own political enemies exactly the way the Indian state is doing, the BJP is doing, the Pakistani state is doing. And, you know, of course, we can assume that the, even though they seem to be, fortunately, in a position of relative retreat at the moment, the Bush administration is doing. And, you know, one would think, by the way, I'll just point out, that if this really was a false flag operation by the CIA or Mossad, that the usual suspect that they would be trotting out would be America's usual suspect, which is Al-Qaeda, which sounds much, much sexier than India's usual suspect, which is Lashkar-e-Taiba. So, you know, once again, I just argue that situations like this require a lot more intellectual honesty and close attention, to use one of WBAI's own favorite catchwords, right? Then a lot of WBAI listeners have given it. And it makes me feel very lonely. You know, it really does. Once again, I hate to sound like a broken record, because, you know, for all of these people who are calling in and saying, you know, oh, it was the CIA, oh, it was Mossad, it was a false flag operation, etc., each of them is convinced that, you know, they're the only one, just them and their little elite group of friends, they're the only ones who can see through the propaganda and have actually know what's going on, and the rest of us are all duped by the mainstream media. And, you know, the irony is that, you know, obviously, those of us who are willing to reserve judgment and just let the facts speak for themselves, we're in a minority position here. Okay? And you all, and by you all, I mean the BJP and the Indian state and all of you conspiranoids who have been calling it the BAI, you're the ones who are jumping to conclusions and trotting out the usual suspects. And it sounds like, at least among WBAI listeners, if not among the public at large, you're in the majority. And that us who actually believe in paying close attention to the facts and reserving judgment and letting the facts speak for themselves, I would argue those of us who are the real skeptics and the real free thinkers, we are the ones who are in the minority, unfortunately. And once again, what particularly makes me feel lonely about it is because especially, you know, at times like these, in the aftermath of an attack like this, when there's all of this, you know, all these tensions which are rapidly escalating to the point of what could become nuclear saber rattling in the weeks and months to come. What's really called for is a single standard, progressive rejection of terrorism and bullying and militarism, and that political Islam, as well as political Hinduism, about which we'll have more to say later, as well as U.S. imperialism and what we might call political Judaism or Zionism, all of them need to be rejected equally and need to be politically defeated. But we're very, very, very far from that indeed. And that overwhelmingly what used to be the progressive forces, and I'm quite pointedly saying used to be the progressive forces in New York City and in the country and in the world, have either, well, the more, the ones on the more liberal end of the spectrum, like Christopher Hitchens, have decided to make their peace with U.S. imperialism against political Islam, which is a grave political error. And those on the more radical end of the spectrum have fallen into either one of two traps, either making their peace with political Islam against U.S. imperialism and cheering on the jihadists, which is a grave political error, or simply denying that political Islam exists and that arbitrarily assuming that any attack ostensibly carried out by jihadist forces is in fact a false flag operation carried out by the CIA or Mossad. The evidence be damned. We don't care about the evidence, because our political assumptions are more important than the facts. All right, it's almost 12:30. I will have more to say about this later, and then perhaps I will be so bold as to take listener phone calls. Maybe in about 20 minutes or a half an hour. At 212-209-2900 is the number. 212-209-2900 is the number. But meanwhile, why don't we hear a little bit more of Kishore Amonkar? That's what we're going to do. By the way, I should say that this is listener-supported, non-commercial WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City. And the time is now exactly 12:30 in the morning. And my name is Bill Weinberg, and this is the Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade. Okay, let's hear a little bit more of Mumbai's own classical raga superstar diva, Kishore Amonkar. Bye. Good stuff. Good stuff. Sounds of Kishore Amonkar, Mumbai's own. And, all right, well, you know what? We'll take phone calls pretty soon if anybody has anything intelligent to say. And if you don't, that's perfectly all right, because I'm perfectly happy to keep playing Indian classical music for the remaining 20 minutes that we've got. Perfectly happy. So if nobody has anything intelligent to say, that's fine. But if you do have something intelligent to say, the number is 212-209-2900. Isn't it? If I got it right, 212-209-2900. I'm pretty sure that's it. We'll take calls in just a few minutes. I've got just a few things to say before we do. One is, you know, despite the fact that obviously, you know, the first thing I said at the top of the show was, you know, a harsh criticism of how the MSM, mainstream media, have been handling the Mumbai attacks and generally how they handle terrorism and communal violence in the Indian subcontinent, with this sort of implicit assumption that, you know, Indian lives just aren't worth very much, and that it's really only newsworthy when foreigners are killed, and particularly Western tourists. So obviously, you know, I'm very critical of how the mainstream media has been handling this. That said, I also have to say that the mainstream media, in terms of assigning responsibility for the attacks, the mainstream media has been much more responsible than all of these callers to listeners, listener callers to WBAI, which have been getting me so down over the past few days. Because the mainstream media has not been particularly jumping to conclusions. You know, they've been reporting what all the other parties out there are saying. But, you know, the mainstream media have not trotted out Al-Qaeda or Osama bin Laden in knee-jerk manner. You know, they've merely been reporting the facts, you know. And once again, you know, with all the suspicion falling on Lashkar e Taiba, that sounds a lot less sexy to you know, American ears than Al-Qaeda does. And there's been very, very little talk about Al-Qaeda, and it hasn't been coming from any of the usual media talking heads. I think John McCain, who offered some comments from the dustbin of history, said that, well, Lashkar-e-Taiba is essentially the same thing as Al-Qaeda, which, I don't know, maybe it's true, maybe it isn't, I don't know. But in any event, what he said certainly isn't any more irresponsible than all of this cheap talk about how, you know, the CIA or Mossad was behind it. The only difference is that, well, I suppose, you know, even speaking from the dustbin of history, John McCain has still got more of a mouthpiece than than late night. Not even late night. I mean, some of the callers, which I heard, were not even on late at night. But listener callers generally at WBAI do. All right, so I'll grant you that. But putting that factor aside, you know, I mean, it's more, it is, when McCain spews his pathological nonsense, you know, it gets around more simply because he's John McCain. Whereas when WBAI callers do it, it doesn't get around quite so much. But putting that factor aside and just judging what's being said on their own merits, there really isn't any difference. It's just equally irresponsible. All right, a few more things I'd like to say about the ironies of the BJP making hay out of the whole thing is that for the first time now, there's actually been an arrest of accused Hindu terrorists in India, which happened just earlier this month, in fact, just last month, around 2 weeks ago, mid-November, they arrested 9 people in a bombing of a marketplace in the predominantly Muslim city of Malegaon, also like Mumbai in Maharashtra state, where 9 people were killed. I'm sorry, 4 people were killed in the attack. 9 people were arrested, and they are, including, by the way, a Hindu nun who's sort of this charismatic leader of the Hindu right. by the name of Pragya Singh Thakur. And the Hindu right has been rallying around them, and they've launched a campaign for their release. And particularly is being led by the RSS. If any callers from India, from the subcontinent, call in later, they can say what BJP and RSS stand for. I'm not going to attempt to pronounce or translate the Hindi. But the RSS is sort of the civil organization sibling movement to the BJP. I mean, the BJP is actually a political party, and the RSS is more of a civil movement. But they share the same politics, and they're really a part of the same right-wing Hindu nationalist religious political Hinduism sort of current. And the RSS has been leading this campaign to have these nine accused terrorists released. And I don't know to what extent, you know, the evidence against them is legitimate or not, but it certainly marks a first. This is the first time that Hindu militants have been arrested for an attack on Muslims, as opposed to the other way around. So in any event, it's, certainly the RSS in their campaign to have these nine released have never expressed any contrition over the attack in Malegaon, which left four dead. So it's rather an irony now that the same political Hinduism current, as we might call it, is now, making such a big issue of what happened in Mumbai and making offerings of compensation to the survivors of the police officers who were killed in the attacks, and trying to shame the center-left coalition government into resigning because of their supposed laxity on terrorism. And I'll also point out the particular irony that the chief minister in Gujarat state, Narendra Modi, who is also a real bigwig, one of the top personalities in the BJP, so ostentatiously arrived in Mumbai during the attacks and made his public offering of compensation to the survivors of the victims and so on, when I mean he himself is accused of having been deeply complicit in the anti-Muslim pogroms which took place in Gujarat state when the BJP was in power there, as they are once again, back in, I believe it was 2002, when the figures vary, but a minimum of around 500 and a maximum of around 1,000 Muslims were killed, by having their homes burned down and their shops burned down and ransacked and all that sort of thing in a wave of what can only be called Hindu nationalist pogroms against Muslims. So once again, rather an irony there. And once again, what brings me down is the absence of any kind of real consistent progressive response to this, and my fear that that the pathetic little remnants of the left in, once again, New York City, America, and the world, and including India, by the way, because some of the, let's say, vulgar conspiracy theorizing has come from figures on the Indian left. I'm going to refrain from mentioning any names at the moment, who have been arguing that there's actually a conspiracy which has brought together the CIA, Mossad, and the RSS, that is to say, the Hindu fundamentalist right. So, once again, if any of you people out there think that you have any evidence to suggest this, well, I'd sure like to hear it. But what I'd like to hear even more is if any of you out there share my loneliness, share my misgivings, or better yet, can offer some glimpses of a genuine, responsible, progressive response to what we've witnessed in Mumbai over the weekend. And more generally, to all of the numerous terrorist attacks and sectarian violence which have taken place in the Indian subcontinent over the past several months, and of course, more generally, you know, the same sort of thing happening all over the world. You know, most notoriously in Nigeria at the moment, where some several hundred were killed in over the weekend in just Christians and Muslims just going at it with knives and machetes and so on over contested election results in the central city of Jos. So just one recent example. And the thing is that this sort of thing is becoming so frequent and so common on this planet that it barely even rates headlines. And, you know, for instance, 150 people, or 170 people were killed, minimum 170 people were killed in Mumbai over the weekend. 20 of them happened to be Westerners, and it rates global headlines. And what just happened in Nigeria, where far more people died, at least 300 and possibly 500, is barely rated a blip from the media. So, all right, we'll take phone calls, 212-209-2900. Just to engage in a little bit of shameless self-promotion here, I'm going to direct people to my website, where I have been, I cover all of this stuff in depth, which is why I can talk about it on the radio. And actually have facts to draw upon, because I cover all of this stuff rather in depth on my website. So worldwar4report.com is the website. In particular, at the moment, we've got in addition to doing a daily report, which is a sort of a blog, which has got reports just culled from mostly the foreign media, mostly from the Indian media, the media on the Indian subcontinent, on what's been happening in Mumbai and elsewhere in India and in places like Jos in Nigeria. In addition to that, we've also got a monthly e-journal, which has got more finished journalism as opposed to mere bloggery, drawing from secondary sources. And there's one story I'd like to draw readers' attention to, which is in our current or December issue, which we just put up on the front page, which is an on-the-scene account from Assam, where there's been a whole series of terrorist attacks which have been taking place in India's far eastern corner. And we've got a correspondent there who we found over the internet by the name of Nava Thakoria, and he's got a feature story in the current issue, Who is Behind the Assam Terror? Converging conflicts in northeast India. So if you want to look behind the headlines and look at some of the similar horrific situations beyond Mumbai, which are happening in India, well, go to worldwar4report.com and do some reading. See what Nava Thakoria has to say, our correspondent on the ground in Assam, about the terror attacks and both terror attacks and communal violence, which have been taking place in Assam in recent weeks to a really horrific toll, which has garnered practically no media in here in the West. Okay, it's 1 o'clock in the morning on listener-supported, non-commercial WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City. My name is Bill Weinberg. This is the Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade, and we are going to plunge intrepidly into the unknown and take some listener phone calls at 212-209-2900. That's 212-209-2900. The usual, talking about usual suspects, those of you who call all the time, try to keep it brief, because we'd like to hear from some people who don't call in that often. And particularly, if there's anybody from the Indian subcontinent, whether you're calling in from here in New York City or listening on the internet in India or Pakistan, we'd love to hear from you. WBAI, you're on the air.
Learn the board, schmuck.
That's very helpful. Thank you. WBAI, you're on the air. Okay, we're off to a great start. Maybe we'll just go back to more Indian music. How does that sound? WBAI, you're on the air.
Hey, Bill. I'll keep it real brief.
One is I wanted to correct you. They're alleging that it was ex-Pakistani military officers that were doing the training. And two, you have to look who benefits. And I would say that the main benefit possibly would be the Taliban, Al-Qaeda elements on the Afghan border who would like to draw those troops off that border and put them on the border with India. So that's who I think, you know, I mean, if you want to look at the most logical benefits to somebody, I think that's it.
Okay. All right. So you're sort of going along with the so-called conventional wisdom that it really was Islamic militants. Perish the thought. 212-209-2900 is the number. If anybody else wants to call, WBAI, you're on the air. Turn down the radio. Turn down the radio.
Hey, how you doing? I just ran in the other room. Turn down, baby?
Yep, turn down the radio. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. I just heard that last caller in talk about who benefits, who gains, qui bono, as they used to say in ancient Rome. That was a very simplistic view, in my opinion, of who gains, because it takes into consideration absolutely none of the power structures that really exist, because if you look at it, the people who created the Taliban and Al-Qaeda are the ones that actually gain from the terrorism that they perpetrate. And so, you know, one must look at the...
Okay, and who do you perceive created the Taliban and Al-Qaeda?
Who do I perceive?
Yes.
Well, who actually created the Taliban and Al-Qaeda was the CIA and the ISI.
I think that's a little bit oversimplified, to say the least.
Well,
I mean, you're accusing other people of being oversimplified. That's extremely oversimplified. I don't believe that the CIA created the Taliban. Taliban is a grassroots movement. It certainly was aided by the... You spoke. Now I'm going to speak. It's called a conversation. The Taliban was certainly aided by the ISI, and the ISI has certainly been in bed with the CIA, but it was much more closely in bed with the CIA in the 1980s during the Mujahideen War, and already it was... You were beginning to see rifts between the ISI and the U.S. by the time the Taliban came into existence in the 90s. Your turn.
Oh, gee, thanks. That was just so... You're so kind and condescending at the same time.
Cast the beam from thine own eye. Maybe we'll just move on. You're more interested in condescending laughter than conversation, quite evidently. WBAI, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
Hey, how are you?
Okay.
I was thinking of your December or January surprise.
Oh.
Yeah, when this happened, I thought of that right away. I don't know why you came to my head, but when I saw this happen, I said, very interesting how this happened the day before Thanksgiving. Now I'm starting to think that maybe, you know, they start with this, and then maybe something bigger happens. You know, sort of like test the water, see how the world reacts.
Well, I certainly have been worried about a December or January surprise, and I continue to be quite worried about that.
Exactly right.
On the other hand, I think that there's a real danger to think...
Absolutely, yeah, that, I think so.
Well,
yeah.
Hang on, hear me out.
Sorry.
I think there's a real danger to the sort of ugly American assumption that it's always about us, and that everything that happens in the world is about America. Once again, if this really had been a false flag operation, one would think that the usual suspect that they'd be immediately trotting out would be Al-Qaeda, as opposed to Lashkar-e-Taiba, which is a much less sexy name. It's more like India's usual suspect.
What is the name?
As opposed to America's usual suspect, Lashkar-e-Taiba. It's one of these groups which the Pakistani intelligence, the ISI, had groomed to make trouble in Kashmir, in India-controlled Kashmir, which has carried out a lot of attacks there. And now, you know, it's become a much more murky situation in recent years, and it's not certain to what degree it's still controlled by Pakistani intelligence or to what degree it's gone unilateral, or it's, like I say, it's kind of a murky situation. And similarly, it's the ISI's relationship to the CIA is also not nearly as clear-cut as it was 20 years ago. And 20 years ago, they were working very, very closely around their common purpose in Afghanistan of driving out the Russians. Today, it's a much more murky situation.
Right. That guy, the guy that called before me, he said that the CIA created the ISI. The Taliban.
Right.
That's a bit, not true.
It's a bit oversimplified.
Right, right. The CIA just funded, we helped out the Mujahideen, who's, I guess, Al-Qaeda now, and the Afghanistan war. Is that correct? Wasn't that the debate?
Well, the CIA massively, in cooperation with the ISI, the CIA massively, to the tune of several billion dollars, backed the Mujahideen in the 1980s. And Al-Qaeda was emerged as a sort of a cell within the Mujahideen for filtering volunteers from the Arab world into the, and preparing them and indoctrinating them to filter them into the ranks of the Mujahideen. That was the origin of Al-Qaeda.
Right.
Yeah.
And the Mujahideen existed before. Did they exist before the Russian invasion of Afghanistan?
It was sort of simultaneous. I mean, 1979 was the big year, right? Was it 78 or 79?
78, yeah.
Was the coup d'etat when the communists took over, and I believe it was 79 that the Russians sent in their military in large force. And I believe it was in response to the emergence of the Mujahideen as a guerrilla force after the coup. But, of course, the Mujahideen really took off after the Soviets entered the picture. Yeah.
What is your gut feeling about what happened in Mumbai?
What is my gut feeling?
Yeah,
my gut
research and what you've seen. And
it's way too early for me to make any conjectures. I'm not going to make any conjectures. My gut feeling is that a bunch of people with really, really horrific insensitivity to human life and being manipulated by somebody with some evil agenda carried out some horrific atrocities, which all elements on the political spectrum are attempting to make hay out of. That's as far as I'm going to go.
Okay.
All right. Thank you for
your call.
All right, Bill. Yeah. WBAI, you're on the air.
Okay. All right. Thank you for your call.
Well, turn down the radio, please. By the way, the number is 212-209-2900, 212-209-2900. WBAI, you're on the air.
Yes, hi. Good evening, Bill. I tell you, I somewhat call and listen instead of listen to Coast this first part of their program.
I'm sorry.
With trepidation because...
Well, I'm sorry, what's COSIS?
Coast to Coast AM.
Oh.
It comes on at just after 1 a.m. And
on what
I
station
also,
is that?
It's it comes on, it's syndicated, and it comes here locally on ABC AM.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And that is because, well, first let me mention something in terms of, watching it through the mainstream media, what I call the fake news channels, but it was either the BBC or on the NewsHour where they regularly run from independent TV, which is a British program. And one of the witnesses, who went through all the turmoil and, getting out with their life, a European lady, I can't remember all the details. And most of them are dead, we are told, and it's just one that they grab. But she said that the terrorists, as it were, or the attackers, I don't think she used the word terrorists, she said very fair, and she said she felt that they were Israelis. So I just wanted to put that in the mix. The other part
she
of the mix
felt
is
that they were Israelis.
She said that they were fair, and they looked to be Israeli. It was, somebody could Google or you're searching in the, it was either the BBC. This was an actual someone who was in one of the hotels, okay, and actually got a look at somebody's face, okay. The other part of the point that I want to make, and by the way, Al-Qaeda, the name itself means the base, and it's actually a CIA name and creation, and would be interesting.
That's not exactly true.
Well, that's what, and I've heard even mainstream reporters get on NPR and talk about this. But the other point I want to make is that what's so obvious is that you are so firm with the idea that, you know, my impression of you when it comes to 9/11, you know, you just don't want to know another type of denial, because when you can see that as a false flag operation, and they're already talking about India's 9/11, of course you have to look at the official explanation with a skeptical eye.
I do. I look at everything with a skeptical eye.
That's excellent. And it's like a big lie, you know what I mean, in terms of how buildings came down, and including 7, no planes at Washington, and on and on. But that's all. I'm glad I did call, because you tend to have a very condescending attitude, and I'm trying to have a dialogue. So when I try to make my comment, I find that I'm hearing you, but I'm not able to respond, so I'm cut off. But the listeners don't know that I'm, you know, I do have some response. But I'll let some other callers get in. I appreciate your calmness about another opinion. You know what I mean?
All right. Well, can I respond to a little bit of what you said?
Sure.
All right. Well, I heard the reports, too, about several reports, in fact, mentioned that some of the attackers in Mumbai were fair-skinned. Nobody's exactly sure what this means exactly. I mean, it could be some of it actually came from, Mumbai police, and it could have just mean fair-skinned in the sense that people from northern India and Pakistanis are fair-skinned compared to people from south and central India. But it's certainly, it's curious. It's an anomaly. It's something which bears further investigation. But the people who are... And that's some of the commentators in India have been very quick to jump on these reports. But, you know, they avoid the countervailing evidence. And some of the same reports which said that some of the attackers had fair skin also mentions that the attackers were speaking Urdu and Marathi, which is the regional language of Maharashtra state. So this is countervailing evidence. And if you're really going to have an intellectually honest approach, you can't just look at the evidence which supports your position. You have to look at the evidence which is countervailing to your position as well.
And that's what I'm suggesting that you do.
Yeah, but I do.
Around 9/11/01.
Yeah, right. But, okay. The other thing I wanted to respond to is that I have looked at the whole question of 9/11 and how the towers came down exhaustively. And if you don't believe me, you can go to my website, worldwar4report.com, and you'll see that we launched our very first issue 1 week after 9/11, and we followed the entire investigation and everything intimately, and it's all there. So I followed it very, very closely, and it is my considered opinion that those buildings were not brought down by pre-planted explosives, and those buildings were hit by hijacked aircraft. Okay?
Well, let me just make this last point. Have you seen Loose Change?
Yes, and I think that it's
because there's
transparently
so many other things
bogus.
That it goes into. I mean, when you have the most protected airspace, you know, by 19 young Arabs with box cutters. I mean, from Jump Street, it's highway
improbable. The government. Hang on, can I respond, please? The government is not as omnipotent as you think, and thank goodness for that. Okay.
Well, Bill, where do you see anything resembling a 757 either at the Pentagon or in Pennsylvania? And you also don't seem to be aware of aerodynamics, because if you research pilots who want to deal with truth, they talk about the aerodynamics of it just on and on.
You're adding on these phrases like want to deal with truth, okay? So obviously you're excluding all of the other pilots and aerodynamics experts and so on who, in your opinion, don't want to deal with truth.
Well, there was the National Standards and Technology Board. I have to get the exact title for that. You have opinions change. It's just amazing.
Well, look, the NIST is the one which released the study which said that the, you know, what you all call the official line or the consensus reality version or whatever. So anyway, thank you for your call.
Yeah, everything is a lie. That's what we might need.
Everything is a lie. Okay, then if everything is a lie, then what you just said is a lie, right? So it's a logical contradiction to say that everything is a lie. WBAI, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, it's B, yes. Hello, hello, this is Bob.
Right, I know, I forgot to announce that, didn't I?
That's what I was calling about.
I was
about.
just about to announce it this very minute.
Okay, well, I'll get off then. You do the announcement. I was just going to say, gee, I heard that Peter Limpern Wilson was going to talk at an anarchist forum. Okay.
That's very, very true. He is, in fact, 2 weeks from tonight, December 16th. I hadn't forgotten. I was going to announce it at the end rather than at the beginning because I realized halfway through the show that I had forgotten. But yes, indeed, the one announcement is that, and I'll have the opportunity to announce this again next week, and I will, but 2 weeks from tonight, December 16th, Tuesday, 7 p.m., the founder and Hierophant Emeritus of this radio show, the Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade, the one and only and inimitable Peter Lamborn Wilson is going to be giving his annual Chaos Day lecture at the Anarchist Forum, the Libertarian Book Club's Anarchist Forum. And the theme of his speech is going to be the magic of money and the future of capitalism. Peter Lamborn Wilson will be speaking on finance as a form of Gnosticism and giving a long historical view of the current crisis and the prospects for resistance and revolution in the 21st century. So this sounds like it's going to be extremely timely, and anything Peter has to say is always extremely thought-provoking. So I'm going to be there. You should be there, too. I'll announce it again next week, but let me give the information now. It's going to be 2 weeks from tonight, Tuesday, December 16th, 7 p.m. The event will take place at the Living Theater, which is at 21 Clinton Street in Lower Manhattan, just south of Houston Street. If you're coming from uptown, take the V or the F train to Second Avenue. Or if you're coming from downtown, take the V or the F or the M to Delancey, Essex. And if you're coming from uptown, you walk south. And if you're coming from downtown, you walk north. And just go to Clinton, just between Houston and Rivington. And that's right there at 21 Clinton Street. So that's going to be 2 weeks from tonight. Peter Lamborn Wilson, annual Chaos Day lecture, speaking on the magic of money and the future of capitalism. Tuesday, December 16th, 7 p.m. at the Libertarian Book Club's Anarchist Forum, taking place at the Living Theater, 21 Clinton Street. Be there or be terribly, terribly square. I'll be there. You should be there, too. I'll announce it again next week. But all the information is up on the website. Go to the links page on this radio show's website, morc.info. That's MORC for Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade.info. Go to the links page and click where it says Libertarian Book Club Anarchist Forum, and all the information will be right there. Or just be there 2 weeks from tonight, or be here on the radio with us 1 week from tonight when we'll announce it again. But meanwhile, let's see if we can take a couple of more calls in the 10 minutes remaining to us. 212-209-2900. 212-209-2900. WBAI, you're on the air.
How you doing? Okay, you know, first of all, that woman that came on, I mean, outside of the 9/11, the fact that she said so many attackers look like Israel. What does an Israeli look like? These all the Mediterranean people in that area. I mean, that's ridiculous. You know, should have hung up on her immediately. She discredits the people. You know, she makes it look bad for the people on the 9/11 thing. I mean, she doesn't even realize that she's hurting her own cause by saying that.
Well, I believe that the implication would be that they were, Ashkenazim Israelis, so that, you know, they would be fair-skinned, et cetera, et cetera.
The fact that a witness that they look like is, what the heck is an Israeli?
Well, I hadn't heard that. There are some, admittedly, anomalous media accounts saying that witnesses said that the attackers said that they were fair-skinned.
All right, but the one man
it's curious.
The one man that they captured I'm sure a picture will appear of him. He already gave it. They already got a name for him. And
he appears to be Pakistani.
Yeah, you know, let me. I mean, of course, I said there were like ten attacked, like five sites. If you put the Chabad house, put that aside for a minute, because there were only like six or seven people in there, you'd have eight so-called terrorists attacking four sites and shooting about 500 people, about 200 dead and 300 wounded. But with a machine gun, I guess you could do that pretty fast. So at first I said, that's ridiculous. You can tell me only eight or ten terrorists caused all that, but, you know, with an automatic machine gun, you can create...
Right, there's nothing implausible about
no,
that.
No, you can create the havoc. First it was supposed to be 10 sites. Now it's down to 5 sites. And eliminate the Chabad house, the Lubavitcher, because, I mean, it was only like 6 or 7 people there. So, and each man would have had to shoot about 125 people.
Yeah, but they had...
Well, I guess you could do that with a machine. I mean,
they had 3 or 4 days in which to do it, and they had machine guns. So there's nothing implausible about that.
Right, and some of them could have been... some of them, well, there were only 2 in each hotel. I know.
All right, so do you have any...
Let me go with the 9/11 thing second. Very, very
must.
Quick. Can I say something?
Quick.
I'll say it very quick. There was no guarantee that those 2 planes that hit the Twin Towers would bring down the building. And I think they wanted... all the planes did was crash into the building, there might have been about maybe less than 1,000 people killed. Probably over 2,000.
All right, so what do you think?
Yeah, well...
tell us what you think.
I'm thinking that was the most maximum destruction you could do. Bring down the building.
All right, so...
And there's no... And,
what are you arguing? Are you arguing a pro or anti planted explosives position?
In the history of high-rise tower fires, there were 18 and 20-hour fires in Madrid and Buenos Aires.
Yes. But the World Trade Center had an unorthodox construction. They cut corners in the construction of it to maximize office space. Well documented. We're going to move on. WBAI, you're on the air. You're on the air. Turn down the radio and speak up.
Yes, well, good morning. First time listener. Is your show connected to the Moore Science Temple and teachings of Noble Drew? And if you are?
Peripherally.
Do you ever do, like, programs on that?
We have in the past.
Okay. I can look forward to hearing that, maybe?
Yes.
Okay, I'll continue to.
Possibly, around the Prophet's birthday next month.
Great.
Yeah.
Great. Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you. WBAI, you're on the air. No. WBAI, you're on the air. Hello?
Hello?
Yeah, you're on the air.
Hey, Bill.
Yeah.
One sec. Let me lower the radio.
Okay.
I just have to say, you are not alone. I couldn't believe what I was hearing. I thought I was hearing myself speak. when you were referring to how people are just throwing things into this conspiracy.
Yes. All right. So you also find it demoralizing.
Yeah. it's kind of like just blaming everything on terrorism.
Right. Exactly. It's the mirror image of what they think they oppose. You got it.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's see if we can squeeze in a couple more calls. Thank you.
Okay.
WBAI, you're on the air. Turn down the radio and speak up, please. Turn down the radio and speak up, please. Oh, God.
Okay.
All right, if you can't talk, we're going to move on.
Hello?
Yeah, you're on the air.
Okay. I think we have to face facts. A lot of what we hear on WBAI is comes from the angle of black supremacy. And I think it just needs to be said. And Martin Luther King, in one of his latest speeches, warned against that.
I fundamentally reject that analysis. I think that it's that is not the problem. I'll just say that. Let's move on. WBAI, I think that all sorts of ideologies of supremacy are subject to these oversimplifications. WBAI, no, you're not on the air. Where are you? WBAI, you're on the air. Hello? Hello?
Oh, hello again. Hello again.
All right. Does again imply that you've already been on tonight?
Yes.
Well, then you had your chance.
I just needed to know why you just, like, are so condescending.
No, you've been on. Call next week. WBAI, you're on the air. Okay, I hate to, you know, go out on a really bad note. Maybe somebody will call in and say something interesting.
No.
It looks like I may have to go out on a bad note. WBAI, you're on the air. Oh, my goodness. WBAI, you're on the air. Hello, speak
Hello.
Up.
Yes, excellent show. I agree with you, sir, that these conspiracy theories are very offensive, and I think people should take the time to ask how the family feels about these conspiracy theories. Two, I wish, I'm still new to your station, and you had mentioned it this evening, that there were corners that were cut to make these buildings more efficient in cutting costs, basically cutting costs anyway. Would you dedicate an hour sometime in the near future?
No. Because I'm bored with the whole thing.
Yeah.
I really am. You know, it's been done to death already. Anybody who is serious about finding out can find out very, very easily that the World Trade Center was built without sufficient support walls and so on. You know,
where would you guide me to go to? Anything online that I can check that out?
Online? Well, there's been books which have been written about it. And
okay.
It's certainly in the NIST report.
Okay.
And if you go to my website poke around, I'm sure I've covered it there.
Okay, may I have your website, please?
WorldWar4Report.com, WW4Report.com, Arabic numeral 4.
Great, thank you very much.
Thank you. Or maybe we can squeeze in one more call. WBAI, you're on the air.
You vote Obama, you get Osama.
WBAI, you're on the air. Oh, boy, okay. I should have quit when I was ahead. All right, there's one more call. Let's see if it's something which is a little bit more enlightened. WBAI, you're on the air. Turn down the radio and speak up.
Go to Cuba.
WBAI, you're on the air.
Yeah, I just wanted to know why you're so mean to your listeners and stuff, man. I don't really appreciate that.
I'm not mean to all the listeners, only the ones who warrant it.
Yeah, but, like, do you go home and, like, sharpen your pencil that at night? Like, do you get off to that? I'm trying to figure out, like, why you're so condescending to everybody.
Oh, just being honest.
Ah.
Yeah.
So, to be honest, you just forego any sense of, you know...
Well, look, you know, most people who accuse me of condescension, I feel they should cast the beam from thine own eye. You know, I think they're the ones who are far more condescending. But since we've evidently run out of anybody who has anything intelligent to say, we're going to go out with a little bit more Hindu classical music. Let's hear a little bit from Shruti Sadoligar Katkar. Shall we? Yes, we shall. That's cut number 7. All right, do stay tuned. We'll be going somewhere else next week. Talk about something more fun, hopefully, next week. Stay tuned for Weaponry with Tom Whisker, coming up next on listener-supported, non-commercial.
Please remember that this program is supported by the listener members of WBAI New York. If you like what you hear, please consider becoming a member of WBAI or renewing if you've already joined. Basic membership is $25, but we accept any amount. Help us keep free speech alive.